Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And it's corn.
It is.
All about corn. Our topic is a four-letter word today.
It is. It's a good four-letter word.
It's a pretty darn happy one.
It is.
We were talking about corn.
I keep saying that over and over.
You just keep saying it is.
It is. That's all I've got to say today.
Oh, boy. This is going to be a tough program.
Right. Actually, I have a lot of recipes to talk about.
Good. I was thinking about cornbread. You were talking about it in the last segment.
Mm-hmm.
The happiness on the face of my daughter at like a year old taking fistful of cornbread and mashing them into her mouth.
It's a pretty good
thing. And eating with velocity. You know, that's an honest food response right there.
I don't know anybody that doesn't like cornbread.
That's a funny thing.
And nice and hot out of the oven. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. very satisfying.
All right, so we were talking about
grits.
We promised we were going to talk about grits.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh milled grits.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a great source for fresh milled grits.
And had mentioned Anson's Mill, which you can buy from online. And they have a lot of products. The
polenta is really good also.
Oh, my goodness. I buy his polenta. And his Carolina Gold Rice. He has all sorts of amazing heirloom variety products. And he is a brilliant man. And Glenn Roberts owns the company. And he has just worked very hard and researched the history of everything. He's one of the smartest men I've ever met. And he has really worked hard to bring to the American public a lot of great products. So I encourage you to check out what they have. But the process of grits, it's corn, a dried corn with the hull removed, and then they're ground like they used to be with stones. And he uses the heirloom variety corn that would have been used hundreds of years ago. So they've sort of brought back the seeds from this corn and planted it, and now it's, I guess he has tons of it. And so he is using that to make his grits. And what that corn produces such a certain flavor, and then the process of grinding it and eating freshly ground grits makes a huge difference in the way that they taste and the texture on your palate.
So the corn, the really scary stuff, that the grits that I recall going to my aunt's in Virginia as a little boy, I don't think she had a feeling or an instinct towards towards cooking grits.
She probably used water.
I expect she did her very best. And
it's very diplomatic of you.
Oh, it really messed me up on grits for a long time. The paste that I remembered
right,
from
they can
that
be,
age.
They can be awful, in
well,
a processed,
but
old
then, but
product.
Then the fresh milled product, when you cook it, go through the basics of cooking grits, because, with the fresh product.
It's a bit of a labor of love. It takes about 40 minutes to cook unprocessed grits from start to finish. So you have to cook them in a heavy bottom pan. It needs to be in a stainless steel pan. It cannot be in an aluminum pan. It will react. Also, you're going to put milk in there, so the milk acid will react with the pan. It has to be stirred all the time. It's something that has to be attended to, and it has to be cooked very slowly on low heat. So you use 4 parts liquid to 1 part grit. So I use milk. So 4 cups of milk to 1 cup of grits, and I put a pinch of kosher salt in, and we put probably about maybe an ounce of butter in, just a tiny bit of butter. And the salt can be to your taste, of course. And you want to check it for salt as it cooks to make sure that it is salty enough for you. It would be a shame not to put enough salt in from the beginning. And in the beginning, you start with a whisk, and then you have to change up to because you want to break it up. You want to keep it from clumping.
So it cooks evenly.
So it cooks evenly, and you don't have clumps.
Yeah, clumping is bad.
No, it's not pretty. But on low heat and very very gently cooking it and stirring pretty frequently. And so at some point as it thickens, you switch from the whisk to a wooden spoon or some sort of a spoon and stay on the bottom of that pan because they will scorch in a heartbeat. So just keep an eye on it, and that's it. And that's all there is to it. And then once you make
them. But you can't walk away for like 7 or 8 minutes not stir them.
You have to be there. You have to be there. You should be doing some sort of other project, making dinner or something, doing your prep for lunch or whatever, or if you're doing a party, maybe doing your other prep so that you are there with the grits while you're, or you're reading your newspaper and you get up and stir them. Something, but you've got to be there.
Fresh milled grits are great foil for all kinds of things.
Oh, yes.
And then, of course, it could be, you know, simple poached eggs. It could be,
you can just add cheese to them.
Yeah.
A great cheddar, you know, maybe something from Ireland or Scotland, you know, a really serious piece of cheese, or you can just add regular good cheddar, American cheddar cheese to it.
But I always think of it as I want it with, you know, like fresh sweet seafood, the famous dish, the shrimp and grits, which seems ubiquitous now, but it's funny. It was years ago when you started doing it, it had been a home dish and was never a restaurant dish.
Right.
It was sort of a shock to people that was something that you were offering.
Well, because it's also thought of as a breakfast dish. And I think that was also part of that shock, is that, oh, you're serving us for lunch or dinner? I'm like, wait until you try it. And there's nothing sweet about it. So there's no reason to, it's a savory dish. It was just really, you know, because shrimp were so prolific and they were inexpensive and available, why not put shrimp on your grits in the morning for breakfast? There were other sweet things to be eaten, so the grits didn't need to be sweet. And also, you know, kind of the old story is also that you go shrimping at night and, you know, you come back at, you know, 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. in the morning and you're hungry. Well, you've got grits in your refrigerator. You might as well saute some of those wonderful shrimp you just cast net for and you know, eat them with your grits for breakfast. But I think the other thing about grits, what's so cool is that we make grit cakes, which we just add panko and
so
a little.
You take essentially yesterday's grits.
Yeah, cold grits.
Leftover.
Right, and it's a great use of leftover grits. I will tell you also that grits heat up beautifully, so there's nothing wrong with yesterday's grits. You can easily add more milk
to them.
You're
about to say cream,
weren't
you?
I was about to, and actually we add half and half to them when we reheat them. So I would add half and half to them. To reheat them.
Coming up soon, Cindy Lou's Spa Cuisine program.
Yep. So, but yeah, just heat them up with a little bit of half and half or milk. And again, you have to break it up. You have to stir them. You have to do it on low heat. Every time you work with these grits, you have to be very careful with your heat and stirring and, you know, breaking them up and all that stuff. So to make a grit cake, we fry them. And you could skillet. You could do them in a skillet if you wanted to. I'd make them pretty flat if I was going to do them in a skillet. We deep fry them, so we make about an inch high cake, probably about the circumference of my forefinger and thumb put together. They're pretty small.
So a recipe for a grit cake, it's the cold grits, cool, you know, from yesterday, let's say. In what proportion to what other items do you mix it with?
I add panko or Japanese breadcrumbs, which is a nice, neutral, very, very dry breadcrumb, so it doesn't affect the flavor. I would say for, you kind of have to feel it, because if they, for some reason, put more dairy product in than I do, you know, you could have an explosion, and we don't want that. So what you do is, I would say about
explosions
a tablespoon.
Are bad, typically.
If you're deep frying, you don't want an explosion. Yeah. I'd say about a tablespoon of panko per, you know, say 3 ounces of grits or 4 ounce cake. Let's say 1 tablespoon of panko for 4 ounces of grits and maybe a tablespoon of Reggiano, aged Reggiano. I used to put chives in there.
Traditional Southern product.
Yes. No. I used to put chives in there, and you could do that as well if you're looking for that flavor profile with whatever you're serving. Maybe you're serving with a piece of pork or, you know, braised. See, this is, okay, I can see braised pork with a crispy grit cake with chives in it. You could also add tiny little crispy pieces of bacon to your grit cake, very tiny crispy pieces of bacon. That would be so good with some braised
little,
pork.
Little tiny slivers, a teeny tiny julienne of country ham or something
in
there.
Yeah, country ham, serrano ham, Iberico.
You do that with a pan-fried trout.
Yeah.
That's a nice little breakfast.
Yeah, there's so many different things you can... Yeah, I mean, grits are so neutral, especially when they're prepared that way. And that's what corn is. It's just this wonderful neutral thing that so many things go with. You know, you can see fish with corn. You can see fish with pork. I mean, excuse me, corn with pork. Yeah. You know, it's just very, very versatile product. So the grit cakes are great. The creamy grits are great. And, you know, when you were talking about a poached egg for breakfast over the grits, I can see that, and I could eat that right now, because the idea of having that yolk break over the top of those grits, oh my goodness, that would be so good. And again, you know, maybe you have a little julienne of the ham.
Did you skip breakfast?
I did, actually. I'm extremely hungry. So, but
let me describe all the other things that would serve alongside of that, just so that you throw your shoe at me.
Okay, all right.
No, I'm not going to do that. Okay, I'd rather not get like, hit with your shoe.
Well, and so there's so many other things you can do with corn. And one of my favorite things is to make soup. And what? Nothing. Is this a smooth transition?
It's quick change, yeah. All right, okay. Grits
That's
are done,
end
folks.
Of grits.
Yeah. Grits are done. Notes.
I'm ready to move on.
Dangers include clumping and explosions. Next subject, soup with corn. Please start.
Here we go. So I just want to get as much in here as I can. It's awesome. So soup. All right. So we have corn bisque, which is so gorgeous. And I will tell you right now that when you make it, you can make it and chill it and serve it the next day, which almost all soups are better the next day. Please cool it down properly. If you, anytime you're working with corn in a cream situation, you really have, I don't know what it is, but it just, it needs to be cooled down properly and quickly. You don't want it to sour. It sort of will sour if it kind of slowly cools down, and obviously you don't want that. So if you do make your soup the day.
Give people a technical lesson.
Yeah, the easiest
way. You're making a pot of soup. You've got a couple of quarts of soup. And then,
so
and then
ice
what
it down.
Do you do? Yeah.
Yeah. You want to you can cool it down for, say, even 30 minutes on your counter or somewhere so that it does begin to cool down. Or you can go right into an ice bath. So let's say you're in, you know, I don't know what kind of container you would be using at home, but we use 6 pans. But so you're in your container that you're storing your soup in. You just need a larger container with ice and a bit of water to insert that into so that it cools down as quickly as possible. Or if you have, if you can, fill up your sink with ice. I don't know how, you know, it depends on how big your sink is and how big your batch of soup is and all that. But that's what we do at the restaurant, is that we really, really cool things down very, very quickly in a large amount of ice and a little bit of water. And you have to stir it every now and then to just keep moving it around to cool it down as quickly as possible.
The dangerous thing that people sometimes will do is take hot soup, put it into a refrigerator, close the door.
That's a terrible thing to do.
And you heat up the entire refrigerator.
Right. As
that product cools, it cools too slowly. And you heat all those items up.
Right.
And you've all those dropped, items potentially are going to become dangerous. So.
Right. You've just massively dropped the temperature of your refrigerator by adding hot product to it. It's a small space. It cannot handle a hot product. You should never put hot food in your refrigerator. You have to cool it down appropriately outside of the refrigerator in an ice bath, whether that's in a sink or in a big bowl or in a something that you have that's a big vessel. So corn, there are two corn soup that I make that are very popular, and one of them is just a corn bisque, and it's the simplest form, and to me it's really beautiful and easy to make. So I would just saute, let's say we're making soup for 4 people. First of all, you have to roast your corn in the husk. So when you roast corn in the husk, I do pull the tassels, some of the top tassel off. I worry a tiny bit that might catch on fire in the oven. I've never seen it happen, but I just pull it off a little bit. I don't worry about it too much.
I'll just snip them with kitchen shears.
Yeah, whatever.
Makes
just
it real clean
it.
And easy, and you don't have to worry about the silk catching or anything.
Right, but you leave the husk on, and you don't have to do anything to it. Nothing, zero. You just put it on a sheet pan, put it in your oven at 325 degrees, and it takes about 30 minutes for it to roast. So you want to make sure that your oven really is at that temperature.
And that's the corn steaming in its own husk.
It does. And it realizes the natural sugars in a beautiful way. And it is really, it's delicious. You will notice a huge difference between roasting corn in the husk and boiling it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with boiling it, but roasting it in the husk is really gorgeous. And once it's, and I said it takes, 30. You want to just pull the husk back, make sure that it's, well, obviously you want to check your corn and make sure it doesn't have worms. So you're going to need to check a couple of them, and then you can just push the husk back up on. But
once you've finished in the oven, you want to
cool it down. You need to cool it down in the husk. And you don't want to handle it when it's hot. It's serious. And once it's cooled down, then you just remove the husk. And one of the nice things about that process is it's usually very easy to remove the silk. It usually comes off beautifully with the husk, so that you don't have a lot of work to do to get the silk off afterwards. And then cut it off the cob. I hold the corn cob in my hand over a bowl. I have a very sharp knife, and I cut the corn off the cob, just grazing down the corn away from me, never towards you. You would never put a knife towards yourself, towards your hand, towards your heart, towards your body. So always cutting away from your body, and just be very careful. It is, especially using a very sharp knife is the only way you're going to get it done without tearing up the corn, and you just want to be careful doing it. But you don't want to scrape the cob, not for this. And you can use that cob for a lot of other things. We make, you know, soup from the cobs, and that's been done forever. So it's a very old traditional Mexican way of making soup. So there's a lot you can do with the cob. So it's one of the most usable things you can buy. It's right. a very cost-effective thing.
So to finish the bisque, you have the corn.
And it's cut off the cob.
Steamed and cooled in the husk. It's cut off the cob.
Mm-hmm. It's in a bowl. And I saute, let's say for four people, I would use 4 cups of corn. I would saute 3 shallots in a small dice and butter. So I'd just melt the butter in the pan, add the shallots. I would do one small sweet onion and in a small dice as well. Saute the shallot and the onion together. Add cream.
And you don't want to brown those.
You do not want any color. Right. You want to cook it just until it's soft, just before it begins to color. Add, for 4 people, I'd add 1 quart of heavy cream, and I would add maybe 2 ounces of good chicken stock, salt, and pepper, and bring that up to a boil. And I would cook that for about 15 minutes on low heat. After it comes to a boil, turn it down to low heat. Just let it simmer, and then add the corn. And I would cook it for about 5 minutes with the corn in it. And for 4 people, I'd say maybe a cup of corn. And I've never measured this out in my life, so I'm kind of just doing this for you. So take it with a grain of salt. And once the corn...
Is that part of the recipe?
Yeah. And Sorry. Once the corn it cooks for those, you know, say 5 minutes, 5-6 minutes, take it off, cool it down a little bit, because I hate to think of people going into a blender with a super hot product, and go into your high-speed blender and puree it, and you have to strain it. So you want to go through a chinois or a fine sieve and adjust it for seasoning, adjust it for consistency. It may be too thick. You could add a little bit more stock to it or a tiny bit of milk if you wanted to at this point, because you've got a good consistency. You don't need to add any more cream to it. And you might want to strain it a second time, which actually I would suggest. And I would suggest that with a lot of things that you make. That first straining is good, but you may want to just refine it even more by passing it one more time. And it's a really beautiful, simple soup. And it's just pretty as can be. And you can put a lot of different garnishes with it.
I'm thinking of something like that with a really nice summertime cold supper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would be...
Yeah, a big salad and... Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, you know, I love the soup with scallops. And I think it would be fun to do even a little scallop ceviche and serve the soup. Or you could sear some scallops and even dice the scallop and garnish the soup with that. Or you could do one beautifully seared scallop in the center and pour the soup around it. You could make a little avocado puree and garnish the soup. You could make an avocado relish and garnish that soup, which would be gorgeous.
You know,
a little cilantro and red onion and avocado and a little corn oil. It would be very pretty.
You had me at ceviche.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things you can do. Again, I just can't say how versatile corn is. It's an amazing agricultural product.
When we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, it's a little more corn lore with Chef Cindy Wolf being in love with...
My love affair with corn. We'll be
exactly
back.
Exactly right.